Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Good stuff coming at you tonight. Thought-provoking, challenging information. Coming up in hour two and for the rest of the program, Jeffrey Kripal, a chairman of the Department of Religious Studies at Rice University, but hardly an academic egghead. He's the writer of a compelling new book. It's called Authors of the Impossible, the Paranormal and the Sacred. And, of course, we talk about paranormal stuff on this program all the time. This work by Jeffrey Kripal looks at those issues and cases, though, through a much different prism, studying this weird and wacky field as one would study a religious movement. The author is not saying that UFO belief or parapsychology is a religion, per se, and that somehow religion is less believable than is science. In fact, the whole science versus religion thing is something we'll definitely get into tonight, as seen through the eyes of four of the most important people to ever write about the unknown, including Charles Fort, from which all things Fortean flow, and Jacques Vallée, who has been a guest on this program a couple of times and is someone who I respect, probably right at the pinnacle of all the people who've written about UFOs and the paranormal, at least in my opinion. And I am really looking forward to this conversation tonight. Some interesting items posted, as always, in the Knapp's news section of the Coast to Coast website. Webmaster Lex and I have culled a few oddities and stories from the past couple of days. There's some gloomy prognostication about the BP oil spill and whether we may have unleashed something from which there is no turning back. You know, in general, I am fairly skeptical about doom and gloom, end of the world predictions because they never seem to come true. Not that we want them to come true, but I would advise you to take this article with a grain of salt. As you know, they finally managed to put a cap on this thing in the Gulf, slapped a cap on the big gusher, and they've been crossing their fingers hoping for the best. Well, it looks like the cap is doing fine, but late today, BP was informed that it looks like there's a seep somewhere near the drilling rig, another spot where oil and or gas are leaking up out of the ocean floor, which is what everyone was worried might happen once the gusher was capped. No word yet on just how big of a problem this could be, but BP has been ordered by the government to learn what it can as fast as it can. And, you know, I'm sure we can count on BP to do its best, right? That's sarcasm. By the way, Mitch Batros, who has been on this show several times, sent out an email on Thursday or Friday warning everyone not to get their hopes up because of the story about the cap on the leak. His view is that it wasn't over yet, and it turns out, at least it appears, he was right. And we'll have to get him back on the program sometime soon to talk about that. Also on the website, we're posting some new photos taken of the mysterious Groom Lake military base here in Nevada. You know it, you love it, the one that isn't there because it doesn't exist. Nice, crisp photos of the non-existent base taken by a friend of mine who likes doing this sort of thing, going out in the middle of nowhere and photographing things he's not supposed to photograph. Check out the links on the Coast website. Other photos also posted there, a little less serious. It's a house that's for sale in Southern California. It's the house Marilyn Monroe owned and the place where she died. And if I had a couple of million extra bucks hiding down in the couch cushions, it'd be tempting to buy it. This place looks pretty sharp. Thought you might want to see what it looks like. Also on the site, an article Lex has posted about air conditioning, the case against air conditioning, how it affects our lives, even our politics, and why it might be cooler to do without it, literally and figuratively. I would hate to think of what Las Vegas would be like without it, though. I mean, there wouldn't be 200 people living here, certainly not on a day like the one we just had, and it's still blistering hot here in the late hours of the evening. I hope it's cooler wherever you are listening to our program. Something else underway as we speak. Another of those government roundups of wild horses. The BLM, which some think should stand for the Bureau of Livestock and Mining, the BLM basically is a one-trick pony when it comes to wild horses. Round them up, stick them in corrals, and feed them for the rest of their lives at taxpayer expense. They use the flimsiest of excuses to get the horses off the public range, or sometimes no excuse at all. They just rely on this magic formula. Anyway, they had a gather operation planned for here in Nevada, a place called Tuscarora. And it was first planned for last year. Then they delayed it because the range was in such good condition, they okayed putting more cattle out there to graze on public land, which is basically welfare for cattle producers since the public pays for that. BLM has decided that the cattle can stay, but the horses need to go, which is what the agency has done all over the West on millions and millions of acres. And I know there are some of you there in the Coast to Coast audience who don't really care about horses or this issue, or you think they maybe they're an invasive species that doesn't belong there. That's fine. I think you're wrong, but I still think this is a story that should interest all of us, and for reasons other than the horses themselves. This past week, horse advocates here in Nevada went to federal court to try and stop this roundup. They won a partial victory, and they sort of had a partial defeat. The judge said the roundup in Tuscarora could go on, but he told BLM that the agency had to let some observers out there to watch what was going on. This is public land. The horses are basically owned by the American public. The millions of dollars that are spent are used to pay for these roundups. That's public money. The people doing the work are employees of the public. But BLM doesn't see it this way. They have essentially been taking this program from the public realm into the black, like it's a secret weapon system or something. The last bloody roundup they held covered 500,000 acres of public land. That's what they were getting the horses off of, public range. But they found this private ranch in the middle of it, and they used that as the headquarters for the roundup. And in that way, they could control the flow of who gets in and who's allowed to see what goes on. That roundup turned out to be a bloody mess, one of the deadliest in memory, with more than 100 of the wild horses dying during the roundup or right after. And BLM received a lot of harsh criticism over that operation. So this time, they're trying to make sure no one sees anything. They announced that they would make the public range, public land, off limits during the roundup, forbidden territory during this roundup that's now underway. You know, for the good of the horses, that's what they said, to protect the horses, because, you know, the safety of the horses is of paramount concern to the BLM, supposedly. Better for the safety of the horses if no outsiders are there to see what happens with taxpayer dollars. A Nevada woman went to court to try and stop this gather, to force the BLM to allow observers to be out there if it went forward. On Friday, she won, and she also lost a bit. The judge ruled the roundup could take place, but it ordered BLM to allow observers out there. So a bunch of them drove all night across the state of Nevada to get to the roundup area in the morning, and they got there, and BLM told them, sorry, we can't let you in. We're not going to do it. They found another private ranch to use as their headquarters, and darn it, wouldn't you know it, the rancher there doesn't want any outsiders on his property during the roundup. Keep in mind, they have also privatized the horse program on the other end. They keep the public away from the roundups by using private property as their base of operations, and then they ship the horses to this large holding facility here in Nevada that was built on private property so they can exclude anyone from seeing the bad shape the animals are in after they're rounded up. And I just wonder what's going to be next. Will the BLM start taking these wild horses out to Area 51 and hide them from the taxpayers there? Will they declare them to be top secret weapons delivery systems or something? Maybe ship them to secret underground bases? BLM really needs to be taken to task for essentially flipping off this federal judge and telling the American public to mind its own business and stay out of BLM's affairs. Well, coming up right after this short break, Laura Lay, the lady who filed the lawsuit to stop the Tuscarora roundup, will join me to tell us what happened at the roundup today and whether she is ever going to be allowed to go in there and take a look around or not. Stay with us. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. My guest, Laura Lay, is on the front lines of the fight over wild horses, and I mean that literally and figuratively. She is joining us now from rural Nevada, where she and others attempted to go out and observe a wild horse roundup that the BLM is now calling a, quote, emergency rescue. Laura, thanks for calling in.
Hi, George. How are you?
Where are you?
I'm out in Nevada. I'm here still waiting to see if they'll ever let me in there.
Did I describe it correctly? You and some others drove all night to basically get there to be there in the morning to live up to what you thought the judge had ordered?
Yes. You know, that wasn't only my thought. A lot of people had the same impression, you know, listening to that judge, you know, ask that they make accommodations for me to go in there and see this. And negotiations had already begun to facilitate that process. I was waiting for the rules and the meeting time and needed it by 6 p.m. and it never came. So I drove out.
So did they ever just say to you, don't go any further, you can't go on this property?
Yeah, public land is open, private property is closed. The roundup activity is on private property, and we were told we can't go there. Yes.
And is it your guess that they're doing it on purpose, putting it on private property just so specifically they can exclude people like you from seeing what goes on?
Well, it is pretty suspect. There's plenty of sites out there when you go out there. Where the courses are now, there's a canyon to run the man, which has kind of a natural barrier and can be used as a nice trap site where the trap is pretty hidden. But it's not the only place that looks like that out there. So there are areas on public land where they could facilitate the same type of environment, the same type of trap site, and do it there. I don't know the specifics of their reasoning, but I share your suspicion.
You know, this law, let's talk about the lawsuit for a second, or the attempt to get a restraining order on the government. Why would you stop a roundup like this if, as BLM says, these horses out in Tuscarora are dying? There is no water for them. They're dying of thirst. They need to be rescued before more of them die. That's why we have to have this emergency rescue, and you wild horse people are gumming up the works.
Yeah, I know, and I believe that when the judge made this order, the BLM, I mean, this is all public record. Anybody can look this up. This occurred in open court. Provided a document that had been created that day that basically describes an unprecedented disaster on public land right now in the Wild Horse and Burro program, where they claim we would go from a 0 to 75% mortality rate in 3 days. In other words, 75% of those horses out there would die in 3 days if the judge granted the restraining order. But when asked how many dead bodies were out there have been observed, well, they hadn't observed any yet.
Well, horses didn't start dying, and then until they started chasing them miles and miles across
Correct.
rocky terrain and the
Correct.
triple digit temperatures.
Yes, that is correct.
Well, I mean, you know, is there any justification for this particular roundup? As my understanding is that the BLM did not declare this to be an emergency until you took them to court, that they had had this on the books months ago. They never called it an emergency, that they just were taking their time about it, and now it becomes an emergency when you try to stop them.
Yeah, and the story goes even further back than that. In 06, there was a fire out there, that affected Owyhee, Spanish Ranch, Squaw Valley, and Little Humboldt. The allotments were affected in 2006. And so they went out. This area was on the gather schedule for last year. They went out and did these assessments where they claimed that the area had recovered so much that they could then approve the renewal of grazing leases, that the area was doing so well, and they canceled the gather. So they actually said just last year that we don't even need to gather. Everything is so good out here, from the fire, it's recovered, and our data says everything can go on as normal, and they've renewed these leasing permits. Now, if this was a fire area and your job is to manage public land, and you had a fragile environment like that, one would assume that the agency tasked with managing public land would be monitoring that area to see how it did over time. In no time, there's no history of any document, even when they did the EA, that called this an emergent situation. They said it could happen, but at no time did they say there was an emergency. The process occurred as normal, and then all of a sudden, a lawsuit is filed, and we have an unprecedented emergent situation on public land, and 75% of those horses are going to die if a judge stops it.
You know, it's always characterized as horses versus cattle, and BLM really bristles at this suggestion. My gosh, we're protecting the range. We're managing this for all users, and it's not just for horses out there. And they really get their bent out of shape when you suggest the horses have to go so that cattle can stay out there. But what is the reality on this particular range regarding horses versus cows?
On this particular range, what it appears to me is that we have a government agency really asleep at the switch, okay? They are mandated to manage. They are mandated through multiple use and fair share. The horses need their fair share. Other interests out there, they're not monitoring the range the way it needs to be done. They, in BLM, in October 2008, George, BLM did an internal study, an internal review on their data collection process, and created a document called the Assessment of Inventory and Management. And within that document, they talk about all the problems that they currently face in collecting range data. They don't have personnel that can get out there. They often don't even have things like GPS devices. They often can't even get to the range to grant these leases to even do the data necessary to follow protocol the way it's outlined. The data, the raw, even the raw data, so the very foundation of the system is fractured.
You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, what really bugs me, and I know there are people in our listening audience, I don't expect everyone to be up on wild horses and to think about it all the time, and I don't mean to cram the issue down people's throats, but regardless of whether you care about the horses or not, if you're a tax-paying citizen, you got to be concerned about this. It's, what are they spending, $70 million a year on the wild horse program? Everyone, even BLM, admits basically it's broken, that it doesn't work. They want to, Secretary Salazar wants another $96 million to build giant sanctuaries back east to take more horses off the range out in the west and take them to an area that where they really would be an invasive species at a time when we really don't have a whole lot of extra money to spend at the federal level. And at the same time, they're saying, look, we promise we're going to be more transparent with this program. That's what Bob Abbey said. We're going to be more transparent. We promise. We want your input. And then it's public money. Public land, public employees, the American public owns those wild horses, and yet they exclude the American public from seeing what they're doing out there. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, it drives me crazy, too. You know, this is, like you said, you don't expect people to be thinking about this all the time. I do. all the time. You know, and just in the litany of what you just gave, there's so many things to comment on. Salazar goes up there and asks for more money for this, you know, he's got to create this great proposal to solve this problem. And all he's asking for is money so that they can brush more under the rug and perpetuate a problem. His whole plan isn't based on fixing the system. So there is no plan. You would expect the Department of Interior, I mean, you know, or maybe it's a myth from childhood, you would expect someone in that position to come up with a document where it's solution-based, where he's creating a proactive solution to fixing a system that's broken. And he doesn't. He just comes up with something that looks good because somebody, you know, and continues and continues and continues. His job is to manage public land for the American public. And basically the system's set up where they're allowing tenants out there that don't pay full cost for their rent and then telling the public that owns that land that they can't fix the land because the tenant doesn't pay enough rent. And that's basically what's occurring.
Can you tell me how many horses are in the Tuscarora range versus how many cattle? Because I think BLM has
told the judge there aren't cattle
out there.
Being out there right now and what I'm seeing right now, I haven't seen a horse. Okay? I haven't seen a horse.
Seen any cows?
Oh, yeah, lots of cows. Lots of cows, lots of water, lots of forage.
Well, wait a second now. It seems to me BLM testified under oath in court, in federal court, before a federal judge. There's no water out there for those horses. The horses are all standing around a dusty old mud hole. There's no horse, no water. They're just standing around ready to die. Is that not true?
Well, gee, if they're out there, they didn't let me to the areas where they are. No, I didn't see a horse. I saw some horse sign, but nothing that would indicate there were that many horses. I didn't see any dead horses. I did see cattle. I did see water. I did see fences.
Do you happen to believe that horses have died as a result of this roundup? And if so, do you know how many?
You can go to the BLM website. They have an update page. So if you Google BLM and Tuscarora update, you'll get today's count. They're supposed to update it daily. Whether they have or not, I don't know. And I have not been to that page tonight. But I believe last time I looked, we were up to 16 that they're admitting are dead.
Would you expect a lot more will die as they continue this operation?
Oh, absolutely. And this time, it goes even further to our ability to monitor the horses coming off that range. They're actually right now splitting up the horses. The stallions are being sent to Utah. And the mares and foals are being sent to Palomino Valley. And so anyone going in and wanting to see the number of horses, like in one group, to get a sense for what this gather was, would have to travel to from Palomino Valley to the facility in Utah, and try to get a count to even get an idea of feel for how big this is. So what they're doing. And that brings up another question, which we can talk about later.
We can save that for after the break. I want to find out where it goes from here, whether you're going to take another stab at getting out there on that range, you and the others who are up there in rural Nevada. So stay with us. We're talking with Laura Lay about the Wild Horse Program and the latest roundup here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Laura Lay about an ongoing wild horse roundup in Tuscarora section, a herd management area here in Nevada. It's not the only one on the books. BLM has several other roundups scheduled for the rest of the year. I'm imagining that we're going to see additional court challenges to those. When we come back, I want to open up the phone lines, get a couple of calls from you folks for Laura, and also found out what the future might hold both for this roundup and the next ones in the loop coming up down the pike. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Coming up at the top of this hour, Jeff Kripal, talk about his book, Authors of the Impossible. It's a fascinating study, and you're gonna enjoy hearing about it. For now, we're talking with Laura Lay about these horse roundups underway in Nevada. Laura, I don't know, you don't want to give away too much about what the future might hold, give away any kind of legal strategy, but are we to assume, safe to assume, that you're going back to court?
I think that's probably a logical assumption.
Okay. And do you want to talk about, the fact that the judge said that you could have access to the site and BLM wouldn't let you do it. Is that, that seems to be that has some potential to be explored.
Yeah, there is a lot of potential here to be explored, but that is one of the issues. Judge Hicks, his decision. I really understand very much why he made that decision. He was presented with a scenario from the BLM that he couldn't prove one way or the other, but with the idea that 75% of those horses would die, he went ahead and allowed this portion of the gather to happen. But he didn't make his ruling precluding me from then presenting for Rock Creek and Little Humboldt to move forward. He absolutely recognized that these are three separate events. And in that recognition, he was very serious about the First Amendment. He was very adamant that disallowing the public on public land at this time was a big issue for him. Stopping the press and the public from knowing what's going on out there and only having the BLM control what information gets out there really bothered this judge. He listened. I was very encouraged by his ruling. However, it's kind of my opinion that he didn't realize that with an agency like the BLM, you cannot give them an intent and then because you have to be specific.
Yeah, you can't give them wiggle room.
No, you can't, because they wiggle and spin and semantics games. I mean, that's what they do. That's all they do. But we do get an opportunity, again, to go in front of Judge Hicks. And so over time, I'm going to get an opportunity for two more herd areas. And over time, the conduct that occurs that we are all that follow this issue and are passionate about this issue are so familiar with, this judge is going to be familiar with it as well by the time we're finished.
Well, it seems to me that federal judges take this stuff pretty seriously when they issue an order and a government agency doesn't follow it. I would think that would get their attention.
I think so, too.
Let's go to the phones and see what's on people's minds. East of the Rockies, Daniel in Arkansas. Hi, Daniel.
I'm concerned that if in case of an occupation of America, which could be very well in our position based on the fact that we do have a very tired military far away. Horses are a source of food. Horses are a source of physical transportation. A man with a horse could traverse across America, whereas a person without one could not. So that might be a means of holding the population better at bay should push come to shove. What's your opinion?
The currently right now that solution, that final solution is off the table for the wild horses. It's been rejected by Secretary Salazar. What I'm talking about is following the law. There are many ways to manage these horses on public land. My position isn't that, you know, if the data supports a gather and if it's done humanely, it can be done. These horses are adopted into families, and Mustangs, if you've ever known one personally and had personal relationship with them, are intelligent, amazing, wonderful beings that become wonderful riding horses. And it's an incredible experience to know that this animal, this wild being that ran free, trusts you, that you've created relationship with them, and that first touch is amazing. Mustangs are so important to us, our country, the symbol of freedom, that I believe that sensible management on the range is a possibility and a recognition for what these horses stand for. They stand for our freedom. They stand for things like our First Amendment. They are that symbol of my Western heritage, and they can be managed appropriately on public land. The horse slaughter issue is a debate for another day and an issue I'm very familiar with and have been involved with for 10 years. So maybe George can have me on another day and we can talk about that.
There you go. Thanks for the call, Daniel. West of the Rockies, Ryan in Seattle. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, George. I haven't heard you this hot in a long time. Sounds like you want to give BLM a piece of your mind. I suggest getting a boxing bag and taking out some of your frustration on them. I can hear that in your voice. You just live it at the mouth. But
well, we've been covering this a long time, and it just gets worse and worse every year.
Yeah, but the question I want to ask was, so do you think BLM and is in bed with BP, or, you know?
You mean literally?
Well, do you think kind of the same situation is going on here, where maybe BP wants to come out there and drill, or what are they going to do with all these carcasses, these dead penguins and alligators?
BP is out here, okay?
Well, maybe BP wants to come out there and drill, but George, another question is how tied in is BLM with Area 51? Do you think? They're in bed together too.
No, there's no real connection there. I would say, I don't want to get too far off the topic, but back when Area 51 sort of first hit the public consciousness, the Air Force seized 89,000 acres of BLM land, public land around Groom Lake, just took it, and BLM didn't put up much of a fight, nor does BLM complain that the military puts these sensors and spying devices out on public land to see who comes and goes to that base. But I don't want to get too far away from that. As for BP, there is a connection that we've been reporting for a while now. BP is one of the main users of this proposed Ruby pipeline that's going to cut across 600, almost 700 miles, digging a 6-foot deep, 8-foot wide trench to carry natural gas from Wyoming to Oregon. Coincidentally, it cuts through 5 wild horse areas, and although the BLM is adamant in saying that its permitting for this pipeline had nothing to do with the wild horse roundups, we do know from documents that they have released that was discussed between the pipeline people and BLM at several points in the permitting process. So I'm kind of suspicious of it. I mean, I don't think BP has caused the roundups to happen, but I suspect that they are going to make tens of millions of dollars in profits as a result of that pipeline being built, and the horses are suffering as a result. I mean, the fact that it cuts right through these herd areas is I think, not a coincidence. Anything to add there, Laura?
I can say that I agree with you. And then we go back to a system that can't even go out and do an environmental assessment. We end up putting gas pipelines. I've been out into areas in Utah, for example, where we have surface natural gas pipelines running through some of the HAs that we're going to zero out at the end of this month. And it's a surface pipeline. I mean, if the government management of the West is anything like they've done in the Gulf Coast, you know, we're going to blow up the West. We'll have a huge fire in the desert.
Well, that's what I think is the management of public lands. The public in that sentence is not you and me, the people listening to this program, the public that the BLM and the MMS and that most of the Department of Interior seems to manage for is big oil, big agriculture, big energy, big mining, That's the public that they seem to service, and the rest of us, in the interests of the regular citizens, always seem to take short shrift. And the horses get the shortest shrift of all. They're always the one that has to go to make way for cattle and sheep.
And gas and oil and any other interest, mining and gold and uranium. And we could go on and on and on, and horses do. It's just move the horses. BLM is mandated to manage public land. They are mandated to manage horses out there. They are not mandated to gather horses, but they will always say to you, we're mandated to gather. They're not. Gathering is a tool. They are supposed to manage that public land in the best interest of the American public. And what they're doing is they're selling it off piece by piece to the highest bidder and just forgetting the real American public in the process, where we're not even granted public access to go out and witness their activities.
And, you know, they're supposed to have oversight responsibilities for folks like BP or other oil and gas companies. We know what the MMS was literally and figuratively in bed with the oil and gas industry, drug parties and sex parties and taking free vacations and things of that sort. Those are the people handing out the leases to the likes of BP and offshore areas. BLM, there's a revolving door. Many of the people that work for the oil and gas companies go to work for BLM, go back and forth. Of course, those friendships mean something, and of course, that spills over into public policy. Thanks for the call, Ryan. First-time caller, Joanne in Idaho. Hi, Joanne.
Hello. George, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And Laura, I commend you for what you're doing for the horses. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
I lived in Elko. You know where that is?
I sure do.
Okay. That's where I am.
That's where she is right now. Joanne, Laura is in Elko right now.
Yeah, probably at the Red Lion, huh?
No.
Okay, well, what I wanted to tell you is I lived in Elko for 25 years. And Tuscarora always was kind of like a little artsy, crafty place. They had they made dishes out there and stuff. And my husband and my 15-year-old son and I decided to take a drive out there one day. And it was a lush, green, beautiful place. Mm-hmm. But when we got into the town, we didn't see a soul. I mean, we drove all over the town, didn't see a soul. We saw one lady out in her garden, and there was a road that kind of went out around the perimeter of the garden, and we were going to ask her, you know, is there a town party going on or what? She always had her back to us when we drove onto the other side. Her back was to us again, and we even called to her out of the window, and no response. And it's like we started to feel like we were not wanted there. There was a couple of things that kind of spooked us. There was a kind of upside down L thing with a rope hanging off of it, and I thought, ooh, that's kind of spooky. And the little shop that had the place they made dishes and ceramics and stuff like that was open. We went into it, not a soul.
I think the Tuscarora. I think the Tuscarora that Laura is talking about is more of a herd management area than a specific town, right, Laura?
No. What I'm talking about is the herd management area, and
I understand.
It's out in the desert. Yeah.
Now. There's something.
Although right now there's Starbucks out here, so times have changed.
Joanne, what are you saying? That there's something weird going on out there?
There was. By the time we left, we walked all through the dishes place, and no one was there. A black crow was there, and we just felt really spooked, and we definitely felt unwanted, and so we left. So, you know, maybe there is some kind of a connection with Area 51 or something. I don't know anything about that. But
Joanne, thank you for that. That would be a heck of a story. I'd love to do that story. If we can find the connection, we'll let you know. Thanks for the call. Wildcard line, Ken in Montana. Hello, Ken.
Hi there. A question. If the area was in such dire need that the 3-day restraining thing wouldn't order because horses would die, why aren't the cows dying?
Yeah, that's a good question, and neither is the other wildlife. We don't have emergency issues going on out there, you know, for any of the other wildlife. I mean, you know, there's coyote, and, you know, we're not putting emergency water out there for the coyotes. And the I know the cows aren't dying. It's now, there are a lot of questions, and most of them, you know, don't take a degree in biology or a degree in range science to ask.
And
they,
Laura,
are,
is,
they are it, very, very basic questions, yes.
To follow up on Ken's question, I had read somewhere that the number of cows out there compared to the number of horses is like 10 to 1. You don't happen to know, though, do you?
Well, like I said, I didn't see any. I mean, I haven't seen any horses, and there were, I know many other people. There are a few other people that I know that have gone out and recently, and you know, no one's seeing horses. They're seeing very little horse sign. So I can't speak to the exact ratio right now. When we get to that question of you know, the percentage of things like horses to cattle, you know, the thing that always comes to my mind is the total acreage of land that BLM manages. It's over, you know, it's over 242 million acres of land. And horses currently occupy just about 10% of that land. So when you look at the big picture, horses are already on just a teeny tiny bit of public land. So when BLM answers, you know, we're mandated to manage with multiple use. We have to put multiple users on this land. Well, our public land does have multiple users on it. And only these remote areas, these little tiny pieces, have been left for wild horses. And Congress said they're integral to the landscape. So why can't we find a way to give horses their fair share in this teeny tiny piece that we've left them? And do it in a way that you know, stands up for what America once represented, you know, in a way that manages public land for the public, for public interest, and find a way where all interests can have a fair share of that, including the people who still love the wild horses.
You know what I wonder sometimes? I see the BLM folks, and I've got to know some of them, and they're not all bad people. I think the people at the top who call the shots make some really poor decisions and for suspicious reasons. But, you know, there are people out there on the ground, boots on the ground, who do love the horses, and you hate to paint everyone with a broad brush. But it just seems like their interests are always siding with the cattle interests. And I wonder sometimes if it's because wild horse advocates like you, journalists like me, have beaten them up so badly that they will never do anything to accommodate the horses or the horse advocates.
Yeah, I get that feeling as well sometimes. And I get the feeling sometimes, you know, that the BLM kind of enjoys the peripheral battle, you know, the cow versus horses issue, and really likes it when horse advocates actually get involved in that, because then we're not looking at the BLM and their process. Then we're not looking at them. It's almost like a diversionary tactic is what it feels like from the BLM. If they can get the debate really focused in that area, then we're not going to look at very hard at the rest of their program. And when you really begin to look at the rest of their program, you see policy and protocol that leads to things like the disaster in the Gulf. And that's what we've got going on in the desert. It's the same kind of stuff. And so if they can get us involved in this constant debate and get us caught in this very heated traditional battle for resources out there, which are diminishing. And so what happens is they keep giving away. It's like a birthday cake at a party with a bunch of five-year-olds. And you keep, you know, giving away slices and slices and slices to the adults. By the time you get to the kids, you've got this tiny little piece, and they're going to fight over it. And that's kind of what's happening to the resources on public land. You end up with wildlife issues out there and cattle issues and horse issues fighting for smaller and smaller pieces of public land. And that's what's happening. And really, we need to kind of look at the agency that's doing this and find out why and what they're doing before our public land is just crisscrossed and with natural gas and no one can go out there anymore.
Lorelei, thank you very much. Well put. And good luck out there tomorrow. Hope you get on and are able to see something. And I hope you'll keep us in the loop about what comes next, court battles and otherwise. Thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely, George. And thank you for all you do for this issue and for keeping it in the public eye.
All righty. Everyone, coming up next, Jeff Kripal and authors of The Impossible. Stay with us for that on Coast to Coast AM.